Begin the current daf Masecht Erech and daf Zayin. Begin 10 lines daf at the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, we had in our previous Mishnah, continuing on the topic of this first parak HaKol Ma'arichin, discussing which individuals are in the halachas of Erechin, both of making the haracha and being the subject of the haracha. So the Mishnah spoke about someone that's in the throes of death, or he's going out to be executed. So halacha was that everyone agrees he's not going to have monetary value, so he's not going to be the subject of a neder vow. But this, the machlekes was regarding, could he be the subject of an erechin vow? Do we say that ultimately he has a said value or not? Now, there was a third Tanakh opinion mentioned in the Mishnah, that of Rabbi Yisi. He says that, however, he could take the vow himself. It could be noidi, it could be marach, it could be makdash. So that the Gemara asks, who's disagreeing with that? No one's talking about, could he take the neder vow himself? He's still alive. They're only talking about, could he be the subject of the erechin vow? So the Gemara says, you're right. Then the machlekes with Rabbi Yisi and the Tanakhama is not in that part of his statement. It's on the second part of his statement, Vim Hizik Chayev. If he damages, then he's going to be liable. That's where the machlekes is. The Tanakhama disagrees and says if he damages, since he's actually goes, he dies right after, he's executed right after, then he's not going to be obligated in that damages, which is mean to say his Yershin. Do his inheritors have to pay or not? And that the Gemara had two different interpretations, that of Rabbi Yisi and Rabbah, regarding what is the fundamental principle of the machlek. It's either do we say a milva peh, which this was never documented in the court, this is like an oral loan, do we say that the Yershin inheritors have to pay or not? Or the machlek says, no, everyone agrees a milva peh, an oral loan, you cannot collect from inheritors. But do we say that a milva ksuv b'Torah, a loan that's written in the Torah, which is essentially the laws of damages, is a loan, meaning a debt that's owed from that it's documented in the Torah, is kiksuv b'shtar damya. If you say that it is, then that's like the opinion of Rabbi Yisi, therefore their Yerush not going to be chayiv. Whereas according to Tanakama, you're not going to be chayiv. That was where our Gemara continues with Meisveh. The Gemara is asking now, and that interpretation that the Gemara had said, that the Machlekes Rabbi Yisi and Tanakama is regarding this Hayyotzi Laharig, this person is going to be executed, that damages, and then he's killed. Now the question is, do his inheritors have to pay or not? The Gemara asks from the following Braisa. The Braisa says, Hachayfer Bibishus Rabbim, someone digs a pit in the public domain, which he's not allowed to, the Nafal of Shar B'Haraga. Now in the middle of the street, this person digging a pit, an ox falls in and kills the person who is digging the pit. So says the Braisa, the potter, the owner of the ox is exempt because that's the liability of the one who's digging. He's not allowed to dig over there. V'loyoy, not only that the owner of the ox is exempt, Elisha Mesa Ashar, that if the ox falls in and the ox dies, Yershe Bal Habar, the inheritors of the person who dug the pit, Chayavan Lishalim, Demeshar Labalim, they have to pay for the value of that ox to the owner of the ox. So essentially, the Gemara's question is, we see from this Braisa, whether because it's a milva alpeh, or even if you say it's a milva ksuv b'Torah, which this is a document, that this is a loan that's documented in the Torah, which is the laws of mazikin, of damages, of a bar, that it's ksuv b'shtar damya, like it's written in the document, because we're saying that the Yershin have to pay their father who did the damages, he's dead. So who's paying? The Yershin have to pay. They don't pay for any oral loan. They're paying that it's as if it's written in a document. Now, that is difficult, according to the one who explained the Machlekes Rabbi Yisi and Tanakhama in our Mishnah. Not going on the first statement, but rather on Im Hizik, that's where they was explained that the Tanakhama is just coming to disagree and says that if this person's about to die damages, then his Yershin don't have to pay. But then you have what's called a Kashis Stama Astama. We have an anonymous Brisa that says that the Yershin do have to pay. And then we have the anonymous Tanakhama, which generally the halach is like the Tanakhama, that says that you're going to be potter for the Yershin of the one who is mazik to have to pay. So what's the halacha? Do we say, again, whether it's because of milva peh or because of milva ksuv b'Torah, but either way, when someone damages and then he dies, do the Yershin have to pay or not? That seems to be a machlekes of a stama and a stama of an anonymous Tanakhama and the anonymous Braisa. So I'm a regular marav, it says not difficult. That essentially the halacha is like the Tanakhama, that the Yershin don't have to pay. But the Braisa that says that the Yershe Bal Habar have to pay is Toma Kisha Amad Bedin, is where before the one who dug the pit, who got crushed by the ox that fell on him, that there was a court case before he died, and the court obligated him to pay, like a regular person who dug a pit and is obligated in damages. Therefore, after he dies, they could collect from the inheritors of the one who dug the pit, because since his verdict was handed down that he has to pay, so that's a milva b'shtar. The court verdict is like a written document, and therefore they have to pay. That's why the halacha is he has to pay. However, in this interpretation, the Gemara asks, but v'harogeg tani, how could you say that he went to court after he was crushed by the ox, and then only subsequently did he die, but it says the ox fell on him and that he killed him. So we see that he died right away. So no, it's kishasud trefa. It's talking about that, yeah, he died from the injury, but he didn't die right away. He had a mortal defect. It was a fatal fall on him, and he ended up dying from that, but he had enough time to get to court and that they held him responsible. And that is the Gemara, but Vam Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman said that Tani Chagge Chagge Torah Braisa explained this halacha, that the case was actually told Meis V'Kvaroi, that what actually happened was that the ox killed the one who dug the pit who was in there digging, and actually the ox buried him in the pit, meaning to say that when he fell on the person, a whole clump of earth fell also on the person, and he was buried. You don't have to bury him already. He was already buried by the fall of the ox. So you see that he's not going to any court. He was buried as is right over there. And even so, we see that the Yerushin are chayiv. So you see, not like the halacha of Tanakama, as we're explaining the halacha of our Mishnah. So it's the Gemara. No, it's not difficult. The halacha is this, that we're saying here in the Braisa, that the Yerushin are chayiv, even though we said that when someone damages and then he dies, that the Yerushin don't have to pay, is talking about the Yasvi Dayani Apuma Debira. It's talking about when the judges were standing there, they were sitting by the opening of the pit. And yes, he was killed right away, he was buried, but it takes some time till he actually dies. And before he actually died, the court who was right there obligated him to pay, and therefore he's going to be chayav, because he already had the Gemar Din, and therefore it is actually like a Milvak Suv Bishtar in the sense of the verdict of the court. But the halacha of our Mishnah of the Tanakam, which we said disagrees with the Beis, he's talking about a classic case where he never had a Gemar Din. He was about to be executed and he damaged, and then the Yershin don't have to pay because of either Milvak Subbatar, or because like a Milva Alpeh. Continuing on this theme, the Gemara says, Tana b'Amar Linah Braisa. Regarding this halacha of the case of the Mishnah that we're discussing of Hayetzi Laharig, someone that's being taken out to be executed, says the Braisa, Mazna Lov, we will spray the blood of a carbon because of him, midam chatasay, from the blood of his carbon chatas, for a sin that he did, or midam ashamay, or the blood of his carbon ashram, for his guilt offering. And the chiddush in this is that we don't consider it like a chata shemeshu ba'aleho. It's not like a sin offering which the owner died, which then the halacha is you don't bring it after he's dead. Because as long as the person didn't die, even though he's about to be executed, he's still alive, you could throw the blood of his carbon and make that valid. However, chatav, let's say he erroneously did a sin, ba'isasha, at that moment when he's about to be executed, for example, he saw chaylev, forbidden fats, he thought it was permitted fats, and he ate it on his way to be executed, so he's chayav v'karma chatas. So then, einis kakanoi, then you don't go ahead and separate a carbon fim now to go ahead and be sacrificed and to bring him a carbon before he's executed. So I think about my time, what's the reason? So Rabbi Yisrael says, m'nesha in ma'anan as dinoi, you can't delay his judgment, which is halach of inyadin. One is not allowed to delay the judgment from holding back from executing him until you have to go ahead and slaughter the carbon, throw the blood. That would be considered inyadin, and therefore you don't bring his carbon from then. However, if that's the reason why, if he sinned at that moment, you don't bring his carbon, then even the first halacha too, we said that if he had previously sinned and he has the karma chatas, and he's about to be executed, so he says, we throw the blood for him. Why? You have to wait until they slaughter the carbon, even though he already had sin before, and he has the carbon, you have to slaughter it, and then throw the blood. Says the Gemara, no, kagan shayi zivchei zavuach ba'isah shah. This time we say we throw the blood for him, because it's already ready. The animals are actually already slaughtered, and all you have to do is throw the blood. That's not considered inadin, that you could do. And that is the Gemara, aval ein zivchei zavuach mai. But what are you saying? Let's say he already sinned before, and you have the carbon, but if it wasn't slaughtered yet, then you're saying, loy, then not, that would already be considered too much of an activity, of a delay of judgment, of inadin. So then, adetani, chata b'isesha ines kagunle, so then instead of saying in the Sefer of the Braisa, that if he sins at that moment, then we don't go ahead and say, okay, let's get an animal, let's slaughter, say even the bigger chiddush, say even in the case of when he had previously sinned, and say, when did we say that, okay, if he already previously sinned, then you could throw the blood and you could bring that carbon. That's only if it was already slaughtered. But even if he had previously sinned and he already had a carbon, but if it wasn't slaughtered yet, then you can't. Why say only if he's sinning right now? So even if he had previously sinned, but you just didn't slaughter it, then still that would be considered inadin and you wouldn't go ahead and bring it. Says the Gemara, Hachanami Kama, yes, says Rav Yisef, that's exactly what we're saying. Bamed Mamurim, that's what the Brice is clarifying. When did we say this, that we'll throw the blood for him? Shahi Zebach Zebuch, by Sasha. If the animal was already slaughtered at that moment. Aval Ein Zebach Zebuch, but the animal was not slaughtered. Nasi Kemi Shachata, by Sasha. That's essentially what the Brice is saying. It's as if he just sinned right now. Vein is cuckling, then we're not going to go ahead and meet that need of bringing the carbon because that would already be too much of a delay and would be considered a violation of the halacha of Inu Hadin of delaying his execution. Now, in a related vein of the previous Mishnah, which was discussing in the context of Erichin, of someone who's going out to be executed, which we said that that's a discussion regarding do we say he could be the subject of an Erichin vow or not, on the one hand, just like he doesn't have damim, he wouldn't have erichin, or do we say that, no, it's a set amount, he's not dead, so therefore he would have erichin. So the Mishnah continues, ha'isha shiatz laharig, and halachas that are specifically regarding a female, a woman, that's going out to be executed, in regards to a different context of halacha. So the halacha is, in mamtinen la achetelet, we don't wait for her to execute it until she gives birth. Rather, we kill her with the fetus with her, because the fetus is one considered part of her body, considered one person, and just like she gets killed, the fetus gets killed with her too. Now, however, ha'isha sheyashva ala mashber, but if the woman's sitting on the birthing stool before the gemar din, before the verdict was handed down that she has to be executed, then mamtina la'acha tele, then we wait for her until she gives birth, because since she's by the birthing stool, that means to say the fetus has already detached itself, has already moved from its original place, then it's already considered a different body. So although it's still inside the womb, but it's not considered connected, it's not part of the woman, then we're not allowed to go ahead and kill her yet, because this fetus is not supposed to be killed. Now the Mishnah continues, Isha Shenerga, the woman that gets killed, Nen and Bisara, we're allowed to have benefit from her here. And they will explain the reason for this halacha. In contrast, Behema Shenerga, an animal gets killed, Asurabana, then everything of the animal is forbidden to have benefit from it, including the hero of the animal. As the Gemara says in Pesachim Nefchav Beis Mabez, the Pasuk says, regarding the Shar HaNiskel, the ox that has to be stoned, says, Bal HaShar Naki, and then the owner of the ox is clean, which on some level means to say that he doesn't get killed, it's just his ox does. However, it also means to say, like a person tells his friend, that person has been cleaned out from his assets. Mean to say, he has no benefit whatsoever from the ox that was stoned, he can't have any benefit from the animal at all, in contrast to the woman, which we could have benefit from her. Now, regarding the opening halacha, regarding the woman that we said that she's going out to be executed, we don't wait until she gives birth, says the Gemara Pshita, obviously, gufahi. The fetus is considered part of the woman, ube yerech imahi. So of course you're not gonna wait and do inudin. So the Gemara, no, itzach, it was necessary. Why? So you would have thought to say, since the pasuk says in Shemayis regarding the context when two people are fighting, and by mistake one of them he pushes a pregnant woman, and the woman miscarries. So the pasuk says that he's going to get punished. Kasha Yasha Salav Bal Ha'isha. Like the husband of that woman who miscarried will have to place on that person that he's going to have to pay to the husband. Which you see from that pasuk is Mamayna de Balhu. That the fetus is, although it's being carried by the woman, is considered the monetary value of the husband. And therefore the compensation of the loss of his children, of the fetuses, go to the husband. So therefore you would have said, Vole Lifse de Mine. So although his wife is being executed, but the fetus is his money, and therefore that we shouldn't cause a loss for him and have the children be executed. Maybe we would wait until the child is born and then execute the woman. Kamash Malan, that's the chiddush that we're saying, that no, we execute the woman with the fetus. So the Gemara says, why? Ve'machanami, say like you just said before, this is the husband's monetary value, and why should we cause him a loss? So Amar Bavo, Amar Yechon, because Amar Kra. Pasuk says in the Nevarim, when you find a man laying with a married woman, so the pasuk says v'meisu gam shneim. So they both are executed. Now, says Reb Yechanan, l'rabbe says avlad. That comes to include the fetus. Now the assumption of the Gemara at this point is it's from the words shneihem, that they both die. From the fact that it could have just said umesu, they die is plural. I would have known that that two means the man and the woman. So I say shneihem, both. Oh, that's superfluous to make the exposition to say, well, in the woman, there's two that are going to die, is the woman and the fetus. But that asks the Gemara, no, behind Mebayle, even though you know Mesu, both the man and woman from the word Mesu, but the word name is necessary to teach a different halacha, is Achiyu Shnein Shavin Dereb Yeshia. It's telling us, Shnehem, both of them, it's coming to compare them, saying that they both have to be equal, the adulterer and adulteress. meaning to say that they both have to be the age of being vulnerable for punishment. Because if, let's say, the girl was a minor and he was an adult, or he was a minor, which he can't be punished, and she was an adult that could be punished, then the adult doesn't get executed. So you see, that's what you need Shneim for. So how do you know to include the Vlad, to include the fetus? So the Gemara, Ki Ka'amr, when did you say this? Migam. You're right, Shneim is teaching regarding that they both have to be Bar Einstein. How do we know to include the child? Is the word Gam. Also, it should have just said Umesu, that they die. Okay, fine. You want to say that they have to be equal, so Shneim. What's Gam? And also both of them? The extra word Gam is a reboot to include even the Vlad, that although it's Mama in the Dabal, but the child is going to be executed with the woman. However, the Mishnah said, Yashva la mashber v'chul, but if, let's say, she's sitting on the birthing stool already, oh, then you're going to wait till the child's born. So it's going to be my time, why? Because Kivin da Akar, once the child has uprooted the child's self from the mother, Gufa Achrinu, it's considered a separate body, and that child didn't commit a sin, it's not considered part of the woman anymore, and therefore you have to wait till the child's born, and only then execute the woman. Now, related to the halacha of our Mishnah, I'm going to review the Mishnah. It says, a woman that's being taken out to be executed. First, they hit her by the area of where she's carrying the fetus, so that the child, the fetus, should die first. As we said, the child is also executed. But we want the child to die first, so therefore we hit her where she's pregnant, so that it doesn't come to a disgrace, which is because if we're not going to kill the child first, and we're going to kill the woman, there might be some vitality, some life in the child, and then the child might actually be born after the death of the mother, which is a disgrace. So therefore, we first hit her there, and then we execute. Says the Gemara, Lememra dehi kadma mesa bereisha. Is that to say, as we were concerned, that the generally what happens is because the woman dies first, and only then the fetus does, and therefore we're so concerned that the fetus is going to come out alive, and therefore we have to go ahead and kill the fetus first? But v'kaim alon devlad ma'is bereisha, but we know and we assume that the child dies first. So why do you have to do that? Anyway, the child's going to die first. That's not, like we learned in the Mishnah Masechta. Mishnah says the following halacha. Tinig ben yemei. A child, even if the child's one day old, so noichel, he could inherit, if let's say he got inheritance that same day that he was a one day old child. Someone that's a relative to his died on the day that he was one day old. And then on that same day that this child is one day old, he himself dies. Then he could go ahead and bequeath to his paternal relatives, meaning that his relatives, his brothers from his father's side, that they have the same father. Now, regarding this halacha, this Mishnah, the Masechta, this need, Devam Rav Sheshes, he qualifies and explains that this halacha of Neichel Umanchel, that he'll be inheriting as a day old, and then when he dies a day old, he'll be bequeathing to others, you can't explain it that he inherited from his father's assets, because then even if this child would not have been born, his same paternal relatives would have inherited, because he has no children anyways as a one-day-old. So there's no relevancy of the fact that he's inheriting and then bequeathing, because anyways, he's not part of the equation, and anyways, that same brothers would have inherited. Rather, it's talking about if his mother died that day when he was a day old. So then, even if the child himself dies in that same day, the halacha is, neichel benichsei ha'em, he'll be inheriting his mother's assets, because his mother died that day and he was 1 day old and he inherits from his mother. Lahanch la'achen min ha'af, to bequeath to his paternal brothers who are not brothers from his same mother. Where if not for this 1 day old child, then actually the mother's relatives, because this is the only child, would have inherited her and not his brothers from his father, because they're not related to his mother. And the chiddush in this halach is that we don't say that this child who died as a 1 year, 1 day old was a non-viable child, and that is not viable for inheritance. We don't say that that's the chiddush in that halacha in the Mishnah Masechtas Nida. But one thing says the Gemara, we can make an inference from that halacha. We see from that halacha is davka ben yoimechad, specifically if you could have such a case of a chiddush of neichel amanchel if the child was 1 day old. Aval uber, but as a fetus, if let's say the mother died when she was pregnant, then we see loy, then we don't say that the relatives of the fetus from his father's side, when they share the same father but not the same mother, would have inherited the fetus. Why? Because duma inspiration. Because who's dying first? The fetus would be dying first. Veina ben yerush asima bekevin. The son does not inherit his mother when he's already in the grave. Lahan chla achen mina av, to go and bequeath to his paternal brothers. So therefore, the halacha was only said when he's already born. But as a fetus, no, because we're saying that the fetus died first, because if the mother died first, then he was still alive. He would be inheriting his mother. But we see that we assume that he dies first. So why do you have to go ahead and hit the mother where she's pregnant before we go ahead and execute her? Anyways, the child dies first. Says the Gemara, well, there's a difference. Hanimili, when did we say, as we're seeing from this halacha, that the child, the fetus, dies first? That's legabe misa. That's regarding a natural death when the mother dies on her own. And there we say, I did the vlad zutra chiyuse, since the fetus has very little vitality, it's just a fetus. So aila tibid balachamavis. So therefore the droplets of the angel of death goes in umachatach lusamon, and it first goes and cuts his pipes, meaning the food pipe and the windpipe, which is the vitality of the person, that's his gets cut first. So that's what we're saying from this halacha, that yeah, it wouldn't be a possibility of neichel manchel if he was a fetus, because he's gonna die first. But regarding the halacha that we're discussing, regarding when she's going out to be executed, he might subrayisha, she's being executed, and therefore she's going to die first, and then subsequently the fetus, and therefore we said we have to first hit her, but to have the fetus die first, and only then her. However, the Gemara continues and asks, and says, is that really so, that you're saying by natural death, however, the fetus is going to die first? But Vahava Uvda, but it was actually an incident. Upirkus atlasa perkusa. When the woman had a natural death, the fetus was shaking itself three times even after the woman had died. So you see that the fetus, even by a natural death, dies afterwards. So it's like, Gemara, no, that's not difficult. Imidin have aznav halta. That's just like the tail of a lizard, where if you cut it off, the mefrachesis, that piece shakes around, even though there's no vitality, it's not connected to anything that has a living soul inside of it. So therefore, the fact that it shakes around doesn't show us anything, and therefore, yes, the fetus died first when the mother had a natural death, and the fact that it was shaking around doesn't show that it was still alive after the mother was dead. Now, the Gemara continues, Amar Nachman Amar Shmuel. Says Ha'isha Shayashva ala Mashbir Umesa Bishabas. A woman was sitting on the birthing stool, she was in the middle of childbirth, Umesa Bishabas, and she dies on Shabbos. So Mavin Sakin Umekaranas Krasa. So we bring a knife and we cut open her stomach, which, and Rashi explains, because although we said that if she's dead, that means to say the child died first, sometimes it could happen that the woman could die first. And therefore, metzinas avlad, we want to go ahead and save the child, even though the woman died, but we want to go ahead and get the child out and do cesarean and get the child out. You're allowed to go ahead and cut her open on Shabbos to save the child. So the Gemara says, Peshitta, obviously, my other, what would be the halachic problem? Why wouldn't you go ahead and do that? As you continue to mebeis, mechatach bebasar, it's just like cutting a piece of flesh. The whole halacha of cutting someone on Shabbos would only be a problem. I have a living person where you're going to go ahead and be removing blood. That would be a violation of the laws of Shabbos. But just cutting a piece of flesh where the woman's already dead and there's no blood anymore, what would be the problem about cutting her open to save the child? So I'm a rabbi, says, Lo Nitzuch, no, the halacha was necessary to say, Lahavi Sakin Derech Rishus Rab. You could even bring a knife through the public domain, which is Haitzah, which that's generally a prohibited malacha. We're saying, however, to save the child, that there's a possibility over here of the fetus, where generally even the fetus dies first, but the mother might have died first, so then you're allowed to go ahead and do malacha to save the child, possible life of the fetus. So the Gemara still asks, Mai Kamash Malon, but what's Shmuel teaching us? The Mesveika Mechalilin Shabbata, that out of a doubt for the safety of a life, that you're allowed to desecrate the Shabbos, but Tanina, that we learn in the Mishnah Masechtas Yuma. The Mishnah says, Misha Nafal of Mapilas. There was somebody that there was a wall fell and collapsed on top of a person. Now that person is buried in a pile of rubble. Safak Husham, Safak Enisham. Now, first of all, there's a doubt, is the person there? Is he not there? Safak Chai, Safak Mason, even if he's there, we're not sure, is he alive? Is he dead? Safak Kinani, Safak Yisrael, we don't even know, is he a Jew or is he non-Jew? Halach is mefakhan alav hasagal. You could dig out the person from underneath the rubble, because even if it's a safik nefashis, you're allowed to go to mimichal Shabbos. So what's the chiddush of Shmuel? We already know this halacha from a Mishnah Masechtas Yuma. Says the Gemara, "Ma'ad etim, what would you say that it's not a right? We wouldn't know from that Mishnah, because hasam hu dehava lechazaka dechiyusa. There, that person had a presumption of vitality of life. We know there was a person. We don't know, is he there? Is he alive? But there was already chazaka of life. So therefore, out of safik, you're allowed to go ahead and save the person. Here, there was never a presumption of life in the first place. We never knew if there was a living fetus over here ever to say that we should go ahead and save out of doubt. So there I would say that out of the doubt, since there's no chazaka mikar, there's no presumption of life here at all in the first place, to go ahead and out of doubt be mechal Shabbos. That's what Shmuel's teaching, even in the case that we go ahead and we do the chil of Shabbos of bringing the knife to Rishus Rabin to save the possible life of this fetus. Now the Mishnah said, "Ha'isha shenerga v'chulu," a woman that's going out to be executed. So he said, "Nen besara will not have benefit from her here after she's dead." So the Gemara wonders, "Vamai? Why? Isur hanonin? It's the a dead person is an element that's forbidden to have benefit from, and therefore, why will I have benefit from her here?" Samarav, he says, "Baimer is tuma," where the woman says before she's executed, "Tnu sari lebiti, I want my here to be given to my daughter." So since she separated that from herself, so therefore that's not considered isur hana, which the Gemara wonders. Elo amr tenu yadi lebiti. If let's say the woman who's about to be executed says, "I want my hand to be given to my daughter," miyavinla, would we give it to the daughter? Now halacha is a dead person forbidden to have benefit, like it says in the pasuk. It says v'tamisham Miriam. Miriam died over there, and we learn like zera shabba the word sham from egla rufa. There also says sham, as the Gemara says in avaydazar daf chavtes mebeis. Just like the egla rufa is forbidden to have benefit, so it is a dead person. So she says that's not going to help. The Torah says it's forbidden. So what does it help that she says that she wants her to be given to her daughter if it's part of a dead person? So Amarav, he says, it's bepeya, which is a braid of a nachris, a foreign braid, meaning it's not her own natural hair. Rather, it's talking about that hair that she got from a different woman that was tied onto her own hair, because that's how the women used to do it. If they didn't have so much hair, they would tie on hair from other women, from other foreign women, onto their own hair. And that's what's called peya nachris. And she says, "Give those braids to my daughter." And that's what the Mishnah is coming to tell us, that even though it's tied onto her ears, but since she said tenu, give it, so she revealed her intention that she doesn't want it to be considered like part of her, which it was when it was attached to her, that should be forbidden with her when she dies, that it should be considered like as it was taken off, which it really is, not really part of her own natural ear, when she was still alive. Therefore, that's going to be permitted to have benefit from after she dies. Now, that the Gemara wonders, time of the Amr tenu. So that's only like Rav said, because she said, "Give it to my daughter." Halay Amr Tenu, but it's obvious from Rav that if she didn't say, "Give it to my daughter," that gufahu mitzer, that this pay, this shetel, this wig, this braid, that it's not really her own hair. If she didn't say, "Give it," we would consider it as if it's her body, and it would be forbidden to have benefit. However, the Gemara said, "V'mebay lel Rabbi Yisrael Reb Chanina," but Rabbi Yisrael Reb Chanina asked it as a question. The boy Rabbi Yisrael Chanina, he said, "Sar noshim tzidkanias, the hair of the righteous women of an irani dachas," which is the majority of the inhabitants did idolatry, which then all the inhabitants get killed out by the sword. However, the righteous people that were not, they weren't hudach, they weren't pushed into avodah zarah with the rest of the people. So the halacha is their hair, which the people themselves, they don't get killed. He had asked, "Mahu, what's halacha with the hair of the righteous women?" Now, Vamar Rav had clarified his question. There is bepeya nachris. We weren't talking about the woman's own hair, because that's obvious that's not problematic. But it was that she had other people's hair braided onto her own hair. That was kamibayile. That was his question. Is that like her body, and therefore that gets saved, or was it like her money? Because the Gemara tells us over there in the chelik that the righteous people that are in the ir and the dachas, they go out without anything, and they're saved, but all their money gets burnt, because the pasuk says kol shlala tikbutz, everything in the city, including the monies of the righteous people, gets burnt. But his question was regarding the pay and nachas of the righteous woman: does her sheitel get burnt or not? So we see that he was in doubt: is it like her body or not? Why, according to Rav's interpretation, we should resolve from here that we see that it is like her body, because it's only like we said, because this woman who's going to be executed said, "Tnu, give it," but if not, we would consider it as her body. So therefore, it should be obvious to Rabbi Yisrael Chanina that the hair of the righteous women will not get burned in the Arni Dachas, because it's considered like her own body. Says the Gemara, no, because Kiki Meboyle Rabbi Yisrael Chanina, when did he ask this question regarding the braided add-ons of the righteous women in the Arni Dachas, is the Tali B'sichsa, where it's not on her head. It's talking about where it's hanging on the peg. Her shekel was hanging on the peg. That's where it was questioning, it would be still considered as part of her own body and therefore it's saved? Or no, it's like her money and would have to be burnt. But hacha de mechaberba, here the woman that was being executed, she was wearing that braid as she's being executed, where it's attached to her. That's where time and damer tenu. That's where she says give it. Then we're going to say okay, she's disassociating it from herself, and then since it's a pay and nachas, it can be given to her daughter. But hala amar tenu. But if she doesn't say give gufuhu mitzvah, then it's considered part of a bad again. It's going to be forbidden. Contrast to that halacha where it was hanging on the peg, that's where he was still questioning. Maybe that would be considered a body or not. Now, however, kashtel of Nachum by Yitzchak on this that we had interpreted the halacha the Mishnah according to Rav, that we said that this that the hero of the executed woman is permitted is talking about with a pay anachris. It's not really talking about her own natural here, and that's what Rav says that when she says give it, and then so that's not really considered part of her. If it's permitted to have benefit. But on that aspect of Nachman, but Vadumi de Behemah Ketani, there's two halachas in our Mishnah. We said that the hero of the executed woman is permitted, and we said, however, the hero and everything of the animal is forbidden. Now, Mahasam Gufe, just like over there, there's no animal that's wearing a sheitel. Just like over there, we're saying the hair and everything of the animal that's forbidden is the body of the animal itself. So, Achinami Gufe, that would seem to indicate that here, that we're saying that the woman's hair is permitted, is also her own body, is her own hair, not the way we interpret it, it's talking about some foreign hair. So, Elam Rav Nachman, rather than Nachman says, no, the truth is, the Halacha of Amish is talking about her own natural hair. Then the question was, so wait a second, even if she says give it, how does that help? If she says give her hand, it's part of a dead person, and that's Isur Hanah, that should be forbidden to have benefit from. That says Rav Nachman is not difficult. Why? Because the hair of a dead person is not forbidden to have benefit. Why? Because that's not like the case of the hair of an animal that's executed. What's the difference? Because the woman, misasa aisrasa. You know what makes her forbidden? Is her death. That's a dead person. Now, hair is not killed. Hair doesn't change. Hair is hair. A dead person you see decomposes, it changes, but the hair doesn't change. So therefore, that doesn't die, and therefore that's not forbidden to have benefit. Whereas vizu, an animal, gemardina oisrasa, it's not the execution of the animal that makes it forbidden. It's the final verdict that makes it forbidden. As the Gemara says in Pesachim, that the Gemara says over there from the fact that it says sakal yisakal hashar. It says you have to stone the ox. So that says the Gemara. So I don't know that, okay, if you're executing it, then you didn't slaughter it, it's nevela, and of course it's forbidden to eat it. Why does the Pasuk have to say, lo yochel esvaso, you can't eat its flesh? Says the Gemara to tell you that even if you slaughtered it before it was stoned, but it was after the verdict, it's going to be forbidden. And I would only know that's forbidden to eat. How do I know it's even forbidden to have benefit? So the Gemara goes on to explain that's even forbidden to have benefit. So therefore, the halacha is that anything that's attached to the animal when the Gemara din was, is considered part of the animal to be forbidden from it, because it's not the death, it's the verdict. So whatever's in that animal, including the hair, is going to be forbidden. So therefore, by the behemoth, the hair is forbidden, but by the woman, the hair is permitted, because it's not the verdict by the woman, it's the fact that she's a dead person. But dead doesn't apply to hair, and therefore the hair is forbidden in a dead woman. So he says, yeah, hair is always, even her own natural hair, is permitted to have benefit. Now, regarding these two interpretations, halacha v'mishnah, Tani Levi taught Braisa like both, Kavasei Derav, and Tani Levi Kavasei Derav Nachman Yitzchak. He taught a Braisa like both interpretations. First, Tani Levi Kavasei Derav, Levi taught a Braisa like Rav, which he had explained that the halacha of our Mishnah is not talking about her own natural hair. Rather, Rav said it's talking about where she says, give my hair to my daughter, and also it's talking about a peyanacha, it's talking about a wig, it's talking about a braid that she attached to her hair. We see in the Braisa that says, Isha Shiyetz Laharik, a woman that's going out to be executed. The Amr Tnu Sari Labita, like Rabbit explained, and she says, give my hair to my daughter. So Allah is nice and you could give her hair after she's executed. Mesa, but if let's say she dies and she didn't say give it, so then ain't nice and then you can't give it. Why? Because a dead person, including her hair, is forbidden to have benefit from. Now the question is, Pshita, obviously you can't give it because we know a dead person is forbidden to have benefit. Ella, rather, obviously, what the Bryce is saying is, Shenoye Hames. It's because even the adornments of a dead person, like the Peyanachris, like the added on here, that even that the Bryce is coming to say is Asabana, is forbidden to have benefit. And that's why the Bryce says, seemingly, the extra, excess words of Abimnesh Hames Asabana, that because of the dead person forbidden to have benefit, is coming to explain and clarify and say that because we're not even talking about our own natural here. That we're even talking about the adornments, the peyanachas, that even that's forbidden. But when she says tenu, then that's going to be permitted. However, Tanika Basidra of Nachma Yitzchak, he also taught a brisa like the other interpretation. The brisa says, Isha Shemesa, a woman that dies. Nen and Besar, you'll have benefit from her hair. which is straight up, even she doesn't say tenuah, even if it's her own natural hair, which was like Rav Nachman b'Yitzchak. Now, behemish and erga, but the animal that gets killed, like our Mishnah said, asur banot, forbidden to have benefit even from the hair. Amah hefesh bin zela says that what's the difference between the animal and the woman? Like we said, zumi sasa srasa. By the woman, it's her death that makes it forbidden, and there's no death on here, and therefore her natural hair is permitted, even without saying tenu. Zug mardina srasa, whereas by the animal, it's the verdict that makes it forbidden, and that is including everything, because not because of the death, even including the hair, and therefore the hair of the animal is going to be forbidden. Hanulach HaKol Ma'arichim, shall return to you the first Perek Masechtas Erech and Perek HaKol Ma'arichim, which spoke about primarily like the topic of the Perek HaKol Ma'arichim, regarding who's included the laws of taking the Erech Vow, being the subject of the Erech Vow, and Noidrin Menidar. Now we continue with the second Perek, which is called Perek Ein Erachin, or as others say, the Gir says Ein Ba'arachin, which seems to be the primary interpretation, because we're not talking about essentially the subject of the Erech Vow. We're actually talking about the one who's taking the Erech Vow, but regarding how much is he going to be responsible regarding the Erech Vow. So says the Mishnah Ein Erachin, that even a poor person who, as we explained previously, the laws of his neder get evaluated with what's called Hesed Yad. How much he could afford, even if he took an erech vow of a higher amount, if he can't afford, we go ahead and we do it on this prorated, and we do it on this scale. The halacha is he can't give pachis misela, can't give less than a sela. However, v'lo yesal chamishim sela, the halacha of erechim will never be more than 50 slum, because that's the largest amount of the value that's written in the Torah for any individual according to their gender and their age. And the Mishnah explains, Kate said, how is this halacha going to play itself out regarding that an individual, for the erech vow that he takes, he could be that he'll have to give 50, but not more than that. It could be that he'll have to give a sela, but not less than that. So you'll have it in the following case. A 20-year-old, who his erech is the most, which we had said is 50 slum, but this 20-year-old was a pauper. So halacha is Nas and Sela, so the halacha is like we said, that he gets evaluated with Hesed Yad, although he has to really give 50 slum, they evaluate him to see he has no money. So the least amount they could obligate him is a Sela. So if he gives that one Sela, and then, says the Mishnah, interestingly, the Heshen, if he becomes wealthy subsequently, the halacha is he's still going to be Pater in and Sukum, he doesn't have to give anything, because ultimately he was evaluated with Hesed Yad, and he gave that one Sela. So therefore he fulfilled his obligation, even if he subsequently becomes wealthy, doesn't have to give the other 49 slum. Now however, says the Mishnah, but if let's say pachis misela behesher, let's say he only gave less than a sela, because he couldn't even scrape together a sela. And then before he gave the amount of the sela, he became wealthy, then noisin chamishim sela. Then he actually has to give the 50 slum of the erech value that he took of himself, which is 50 slum, because the first giving that he gave didn't fulfill his erechin, and he still has the erech vow upon him, because a poor person that takes the evaluation of himself, and if he becomes wealthy before he gives it, he has to give the evaluation of like a regular wealthy person, as the Gemara learns later on, the Yudzayin Mabez. Now the Mishnah continues, let's say regarding this poor 20-year-old that takes the erech vow of himself, and hayu biyodav chamish slum. So he was poor. He couldn't afford the 50 slum that he was taking of an erech value of himself, but he had 5 slum. So we have a machlekes. Rav Meir says, ein leisne la'achas. He only gives one sela because he's poor. He's not giving 50, he only gives one. The chamim, the sages say, no, leisne is cool, and he gives whatever he has. He has 5, so he gives 5. He can't afford 50, but you don't give one, you give 5. Now the Mishnah concludes, as we had mentioned before, as the girsa is with a base, ein ba'arochen pachas misela. We don't have an erichin that someone will give less than a sala. V'lo yesal chamishim sala, but we don't have that it'll give more than 50 slum. Now the Gemara asks regarding the opening halacha of our Mishnah. Im ba'arochen pachas misela menolim. Where do we know this halacha from? That by erichin, you don't give less than a sala. So says the Gemara, because the Pasuk says in Yikra, it says in the Pasuk, v'chol erichecha yiyeh b'shekel ha-kodesh, that all your erichin, all your erich vows, will be with the holy shekel. Which what that means to say is, kol erich and shat demayrich, all erich vows that you're going to take, lo yeh pchusim a shekel, cannot be less than a shekel. So even though we're going to do hesed yad, that the poor person won't give the 50, the 30, the 20, whatever it is, but less than a shekel it can't be. Now, also as the Mishnah said, v'lo yesal chamishim slum, it's not going to be more than 50 slum, because the pasuk is chamishim, meaning when it talks about all the different numbers, the metrics, the most it says is 50, which is a 20-year-old male, and therefore that's going to be the most that a person's going to give. Now the Mishnah then had a machlekes hayibiyodav chamisha b'chulu. If he has 5 slum and his erich vow was really for 50, but he can't afford that, so he had a machlekes, does he give 1 or does he give 5? So the Gemara says, my time to Remei, what's the reason to Remei that he says you only give 1? So says the Gemara, because k'siv chamish and k'siv shekel. This is a 20-year-old who it says to give 50. Now, he can't afford 50. And the other hand, it also says that a person can give a shekel, but shekel ha-kaydish. Like we said, a poor person could give even just a shekel. So, oy chamishim, oy shekel. Either 50 or a shekel. Nothing in between. You have 5, okay, that doesn't really help us. You're not giving the 50. So then you give the shekel. But Rabbanan, they would tell you, no. Hahu l'chol erichin sha'at demayrich. That is coming to tell us that it says, l'chol erich chayib shekel ha-kaydish, that you give just a shekel. That's saying that any time you're taking an erich vow, that even if he's the most poor person that's possible, layib chusin b'shekel, it can't be less than a shekel. That's what Huda Asa, that's what the teaching is coming to teach us in that pasuk. However, hecha de islay, but if he could afford more, then of course he has to give more. And if he has 5, he has to give 5. Because Amakra, the pasuk says, ashatasa yad hanayder, that however much the hand of the one who took the vow could afford, v'ara yad masegas, and he could afford 5, so of course he has to give 5. But Remei, he would tell you, no, how who that pasuk teaches a different teaching. It doesn't tell us that, okay, whatever you could afford 5, then you have to give 5. No, he says either 50 or 1. Because that pasuk is teaching us, yad ha-neider, however much the one who's taking the vow could afford, but v'lo yad ha-neider doesn't go based on how much the one who's the subject of the vow could afford. That's what Huda Asa, that's what the pasuk is coming to teach us, that to tell us that if a poor person took the erich value of a wealthy person, he still gives according to how much he, the poor person, could afford, which is just the shekel. Now, but for Rabbanan, however, they would tell you that you're right. Although the pasuk is coming to teach when it says yad ha-noidur, but it's telling us v'lo yad ha-nidur, however, the pasuk still says al pi asher tasik, lav memei l'sham minot, don't you also could infer from this pasuk the heichad yad masegis, but where he could afford, which is like in this case of the 5 slum, that shalkum, and of course you'll take from him the 5 slum, and therefore they say, no, you don't just give 1, you give the 5. Now, katir on this halacha, this opinion of the Rabbanan, which they say, okay, if you can't afford the 50, you don't give 1, you give however much you could afford, which is the 5 slum. So Amar Vad Bar Abba, he says, hayubiyod of chamei slum, if someone had 5 slum, like the case we were describing. Now, the Amar Erki Hilai says, I have to give my erich vow. Let's say he's a 20-year-old to give 50, which he obviously can't afford. V'chaz v'amar erich ilai, and then again he takes the erich vow and says, my erich value is ami. Then he does as follows. V'nosin arba, and he gives 4 slum to Hektish, to the Bedek Abayis, lishnia, first for the second erich vow that he took, because that was the one that the kohen had evaluated him for first. V'echel rishonia, then he only has 1 tzela left, and he gives that one for the first erich vow that he took. So Allah is going to be Yotzid Yidei Shtein. He has fulfilled both Erech and vows. Even according to Rabbanan, not like Remei, according to Remei, of course, you have to give only 1 for each. Even according to Rabbanan, because since he gave the second vow first, he has fulfilled his obligation. My time, what's the reason? So the Gemara explains. The Allah is Baal Chayiv Mu'ukhar. If a later debtor, someone that's owed money later, a later collector, Shakad Magava, if he goes and he collects first, which really the first collector is supposed to go first, but the second one jumps first and collects first, the halacha is Mashagava Gava. What he's collected, ultimately he was owed the money and he has collected, he could keep it. Now, therefore, that relates to Ahar Halacha. When this person gives to his first Erichin vow, he gives that 1 cell he has left, he has given whatever he has because all he has now is 1. Now, you can't say, oh, so what do you mean? So then the second vow that you gave first, so why'd you give only 4? You should have given 5. Then you didn't fulfill everything that you had, because according to Rabban, you have to give everything that you have, which is 5. No, because Be'idna Diyav Lishniya, when he gave those 4 to the second vow, Mishabat L'Rishayna, that was indebted to the first vow, which it already took. Because even what he did give wasn't really allowed to be given to the second one. That's considered like a Baal Chayiv Mu'ukhar. Now, ultimately, we said what he gave is given, because Baal Chayiv Mu'ukhar Shagava Mashagava Gava. But really, regarding the second one, he was really like an Ani, because he had nothing. So therefore, even 1 shekel would have helped. He gave 4, okay. Harizim Ashubach, you gave 4. Now, so therefore, the 4 that you gave was given. But in the Diyav L'Rishayna, so therefore, at the time when he's giving to the first one, so lesley, he doesn't have anything else. So therefore, for that, all he has is 1. He's an Ani, he's getting Hesed Yad. So you give whatever you have. So when it comes to back to the first one, after you give to the second one, all he has is a seller. So fine, even according to Rabbanan, that's all you have, you'd give. And regarding the second one, which he did first, so there also really he has no money, because it's already all indebted to the first one. So you only have to give 1. You gave 4, okay. It's done. And therefore, in this situation, he has fulfilled both. However, as the Gemara continues, the top of Chesem and Aleph, but let's say, Nosan Arba L'Rishayna. Let's say he first gives 4 slum to the first one, meaning the Kayin first evaluates him regarding the first Erech and Val that he took. And then he only has Va'achas L'Shni, he gives the remaining Selah to the second vow. So Yidei Shniya Yatza. So the second vow he has fulfilled his obligation because all 5 is really indebted to the first Erech and Val. When he took the second one, he was a pauper. He can't give less than a Selah, but giving a Selah would fulfill it. But Yidei Rishayna Lo Yatza. But for the first vow that he gave 4, he has not fulfilled his obligation. Why? Because Kulu Mishabdin Lo Rishayna. When he was evaluated for the first one, all of them were indebted. All 5 were indebted for the first Erechim vow, where, like we said, according to the Pinyin Rabban, you have to give everything that you have. And therefore, if this person subsequently becomes wealthy, he has to give the whole Erechim vow of the 50 slum, because the first giving that he gave, which was 4, was not enough. He has to really give all 5. And since he gave 4, so the second one that he gave, the one is good. But the first one is not going to fulfill his obligation. Now, related, Boyer of Adab Rav, he asked, how you be all the chamish slum? Like this case, if someone had 5 slum, the Amr Shnei Erech Yilai, not like the previous case where he says Erech Yilai and then says Erech Yilai. Here he says 2 of my Erechim is on me, meaning Bavas Achas. He does it in one shot. Now, what would you say in this case? Would you say Kivin Bavas Achas Nada, since he took the Erechim vows at the same time, so Kiyad Dodi Tafsin, so they take effect at the same time. So therefore, Yov Tarti Pagilahai, Vatarti Pagilahai. So both of them, the obligation is on both. So therefore, you have to give 2.5 for this Erechim vow and 2.5 for that vow. Idilma, maybe then no. Kula Chazi Lahai, but Kula Chazi Lahai. Each one is fit for whatever you have, which your money is obligated for each Erechim vow, the 5 slum. So you'll have to give you 5 slum for one of them, and then you will still have another existing obligation of an Erechim vow, a 5 slum on you, and you can't give just 2.5 and 2.5, because the obligation is to give 5, because each Erechim vow took effect at the same time, neither one is better than the other. So the Gemara take a letter, it's not clear, do we say that, okay, that means each one has only in half, or each one has in the whole thing, and you could only fulfill one and still have the obligation of the other one. Now the Mishnah concluded by repeating Ein Be'erchin Pachas Meselah, the same opening sentence of the Mishnah. The Mishnah concluded with the same sentence. It says, Ein Be'erchin Pachas Meselah, you will not have an Erechim vow someone giving less than a Selah, but Lo'yesa V'chulu, not giving more than 50. So the Gemara says, Hasulamali, why do you need it? It's the same sentence we started with the Mishnah. So the Gemara, Hakam Ashimlam, what the Mishnah is coming to teach by saying this statement again, is to make an inference. Pachas Meselah Hu Delecha, you're right. Less than a Selah person is not going to give. Ha'yesra al Selah Ikka. However, there will be a situation where a person will give more than a Selah, meaning even though he cannot afford the 50 slum, but if he has, let's say, 5 slum, he'll give all the 5 slum, which is more than a Selah. And so too, Yesra al Chamishim Udalaka. Yeah, more than 50 he won't give. Ha'pachas mechamishim Ikka. But less than 50 he will give because of a stomach Rabbanan. The Mishnah is anonymously saying a closed statement to tell us anonymously, like Drabbanan, where yes, you could even give 5 slum. Because according to a mayor, in the situation, he doesn't hold that the halacha of Hesed Yad will be more than a Selah and less than 50 by someone, let's say, here that his Erechin is 50. It's either going to be 50 or 1. But this that we're saying, not less than a Selah or not more than 50 infers, but it could be less than 50, it could be more than a Selah, which again is to say anonymously, like Drabbanan, that if you have 5, then you have to give all 5.